This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Hour 2 of our 3.5 hour radio extravaganza. Hope you're having a great day, better day than the Yankees are having with the questions about Cole and about Judge. The Giants had a pretty good day, yesterday at least, and today they get Drew Lock. But I don't think that means, you know, it's going to be Daniel Jones starting. I think I get the feeling, Don and Peter, Giants are going to draft a quarterback. So, and I also get the feeling that there's a chance that they could trade Daniel Jones. So Drew Lock could just be a placeholder. This is a former first-round draft pick that didn't work out. But I don't think that, okay, that's our quarterback situation now. It's no. Jones, Lock, and DeVito. I just don't see it that way.
No, but I guess this could be bad news for DeVito, though.
Well, they'll carry three. If they get somebody else, it's bad news.
Well, I mean, if they draft a quarterback, then right. I think it's bad news for DeVito, and I think they will try to draft a quarterback. They're not going to have four quarterbacks, so unless they gave, you know, somebody to compete for the job and he wins it and beats out Locke, I guess that's possible. But you need options. I don't think this is any indication for or against the future of Daniel Jones having Drew Lock.
I really hope that
Jordan Ronan. I'm sorry, Peter. Jordan Ronan said the Giants had said from the start they were going to add another quarterback. Drew Lock is young and has proven he could step in and win games. He's contingency for Daniel Jones if they don't draft a quarterback. This does not affect whether the Giants take a quarterback in the draft. I'm sorry, Peter.
No, that's basically Jordan saying what I was already thinking, which is I can't imagine getting Drew Lock means anything except we just want to be able to have a veteran body there who's able to play.
All right, we have our guest on the line, and that is Greg Anthony. So these are the details on the doubleheader at TNT tonight. 7 p.m. for the NBA on TNT pregame show with Shaq, Jamal Crawford, Candace Parker, and Adam Lefko. Then at 7:30, Knicks and the Sixers from the Garden with Greg Anthony, Ian Eagle, and Jared Greenberg. And then the second game of the doubleheader, Timberwolves and the Clippers. We're waiting on official word whether or not OG Anunoby is going to play for the Knicks. And we welcome in Greg Anthony. Greg, how you doing? It's Michael, Don, and Peter.
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. I'm just enjoying your football talk.
There's a lot of it going on, I'll tell you that. Let me ask you this, Greg. There's so many injuries that the Knicks have had. There's a chance you get Anunoby back tonight. And then there's Julius Randle. And when he comes back, we're not quite sure. How long will it take for them to mesh? And is there a point of no return where if they get there that late, you're not going to see the Knicks team that went 14-2 in January?
Well, there's two ways to answer that. One, they could still be good enough to potentially make a deep run, even though they wouldn't be completely back, if you get what I'm saying. Like, they could get Randle back, let's say, last week of the season. He has a familiarity with most everyone there. And the way they play, they're a tough-minded, defensive-oriented team. They could still have some success in the postseason. I could absolutely see that. But I think that this is a team on paper that could potentially be more. But, you know, you do. You need chemistry. You need time for everybody to feel comfortable within their roles. Because you have to remember, what they've had to do in the absence of those guys is kind of redefine who they are as a team. Mm. You know, Brunson's had to take on far more of a load offensively. DiVincenzo, you got a lot of other guys that are asked to do a lot more than they would ordinarily. And then they got to transition back to their normal role. And so that just takes time, man. It does. But having said that, right now the goal is to avoid the play-in, because while they sit in a good position in terms of that four spot, they're only a game and a half out of the play-in. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately, you know, what you're trying to avoid right now is you don't want to put yourself in a scenario where it could be a one and done, because no matter how good you are, you guys know in this league on any given night, anybody can get got. And so I think right now the focus, if you're Tom Thibodeau, tonight as a perfect example, we got to win this game. You know, you're right there in essence a game above this Philly team. So this is also going to be huge in terms of tie break. And so you just want to focus on the here and now. I mean, we can speculate about it, but ultimately with all the hopes and optimism that this team has fueled with that great stretch where they went 14-2, they could be on the outside looking in. And that's not, you know, hyperbole. That's just the reality. I mean, they're right now, like I said, you're in a four spot, but Miami's only two games out, and they're in eight, and then Indy's in the seventh spot. They're a game and a half. And so there's just still a lot to be done, even though we only have, in essence, about 15, 16 games. Or in the Knicks' case, I think they got 18 left to go.
Now, if they avoid the play-in or finish 6 or 5, can you see them being able to make a run in the playoffs south of the four seed?
Absolutely. Well, how about the fact that they could have a rematch with Cleveland 6-3 from a year ago?
Right.
I think they would like that scenario. Both teams are improved from a year ago. But I just think matchup-wise, some of the issues that the Knicks present for the Cavs, they still don't have an answer in terms of the level of physicality that they can bring on the front line. They could absolutely get there. And then you potentially are matched up with, say, Milwaukee in the second round because nobody's going to catch Boston. That's just not going to happen. So you get Milwaukee in the second round. Again, a challenging matchup, but when you break Milwaukee down, listen, unless Middleton gets all the way back, you've got to be able to impact two guys, two great guys in Antetokounmpo and Lillard. But with their schemes and their defense, I got to feel like they'd have a chance if they can stay disciplined.
Now, I think, Greg, you got to be kind of happy right now, frankly, if you're a Knicks fan sitting at the four spot still. I mean, we were worried that by the time OG was back, it could be worse than that. But behind the scenes, one of the things we struggle with is sort of how to analyze this team game to game. Is it reasonable to be, like last weekend, for example, they give you a great win over Orlando and then a dreadful loss against Philadelphia, and you come in Monday sort of like, how do we even judge this team? How are you able to analyze this team with the sort of mishmash of lineups they've had over the last few weeks?
Well, it's a great point because you really can't. And quite frankly, I wouldn't try to. Not just because it's not who they want to be or who they should be if healthy. And you really can't look at it. Listen, they're tough. They're gritty. They compete. They understand how to win games. They know they got to get more possessions than the opponent. They've got a reliable superstar, really, too, because even though I know Randall's been much maligned here, but he's been a hell of a player in this stretch here with the Knicks, big picture. And so they've got enough. And because of how the landscape of this Eastern Conference is, you know, as great a team as Boston is, you know, Boston doesn't overwhelm you physically, right? And they've got some demons in the postseason themselves. You know, Milwaukee does have some size, but they're not an overly athletic team. And they've got some inconsistencies in terms of how they defend it. So, you know, the Knicks, you want a puncher's chance, right? If you can get all the way healthy, and I haven't found out what the latest is on Mitchell Robinson, but that's even a possibility that he gets back as well. But if you have this roster whole, you go into a series against anybody in the East feeling like you got a legitimate chance. And I think ultimately in the postseason and the landscape of the NBA now, that's really all you could ask for. There's just so much parity from top to bottom. And I think if you're the Knicks, you got to look across at the rest of the Eastern Conference and feel like, man, we can beat anybody four times.
Talking with Greg Anthony, he's going to do the game tonight on TNT with Ian Eagle. You know, Greg, I don't know your level of knowing this in terms of personal, but I'm sure you've had teammates. How concerned should we be about Julius Randle? The separated right shoulder, he's a left-hander, but he's a physical force inside. He's going to initiate contact. How concerned are you that he comes back and it happens again?
Well, you're very concerned. And I will say the one thing about shoulders is once it comes out, it's far more likely that it will happen again. So that goes without saying. And the reality is, from his standpoint, is will he have the confidence? Because to your point, he's a physical player. He's a guy that likes to initiate contact on offense. And even though he's a lefty, oftentimes as a lefty, you're going to initiate with your right shoulder, right? And so that level of confidence, no one is going to know, and he won't know, even if he's cleared 100%, until you actually start getting out there and taking those hits. And so that's also a big concern. There's just no way around that. And as a teammate, you would be concerned, but ultimately what you would say in your mind is like, look, if he's out there, he's ready to go. If he's not, he's not ready to go. And you're going to support him and hope that he can get out there. Listen, you guys, you can malign him, and he's fair to criticize, but one thing he's always done is showed up.
Right.
You know, the guy's been durable for his tenure with the Knicks. And so, obviously, I'm sure he's frustrated to not be out there with his teammates. And this is probably the best collection of talent they've had in a long time on that Knicks roster. So it's got to be frustrating for everybody involved to not have a whole team.
Well, Greg, Brunson has just been so special for this team, but he's also had to do a lot of heavy lifting with these injuries, and he plays such a physical game. How concerned would you be about him moving forward, of this team trying to drive for a high seed and what he may have left by the time they get to the playoffs?
And I'm glad you asked that, because actually that is my bigger concern, quite frankly, because as great a player as Jalen is and a great a leader as he is, he's not physically overwhelming, but he plays a physical style, right? And so, and I've seen it watching him recently, he's laboring and he's battling through injuries and playing a lot of minutes and, you know, asked to do a whole lot. And you're exactly right. I'm more concerned with him not having enough in the tank vis-a-vis the injuries and the workload than anything. Because I think, listen, you can't control the injuries for the guys who aren't out there. But this is a scenario for the Knicks, them needing to win games, because they're not going to be able to back in to staying out of the play-in, right? And they're going to need him in order to do that. So it's got to be a big concern. And Coach Thibodeau has always been a guy that's played his best players heavy minutes, right? And so that's also something that you've got to be very cognizant of as a front office and a coaching staff, because you do want to have the best version of Jalen Brunson if and when the postseason starts.
Greg Anthony is our guest here on the show. He'll be doing tonight's game, Knicks and the Sixers, along with Ian Eagle on TNT. 7:30 is the tip. Of the teams you've seen, I mean, you've seen them all, Greg. Who's the team to beat? Is it the Nuggets? Is it the Timberwolves if Karl Anthony Towns comes back? Is it Boston? Who are you looking at and say that's the team?
Well, listen, it's crazy. Denver to me is the team, because they're the defending champs, and I still feel like they present the most challenges to defend, and they are also a really good defensive team. But they have questions. They don't have the depth that they had a year ago. Boston's been phenomenal all season long, and you know, they've had hiccups here and there, but I mean, they've won 50 out of 64 games, man. You don't do that unless you're an elite team. But the question with them, as it's been the last few years, they just seem to kind of shoot themselves in the foot in the postseason, you know? And so that allows you to have some doubt. I just think it's really wide open. I think legitimately there's probably eight teams. I'd be surprised if a team like OKC, quite frankly, even Minnesota, if they were to get to the finals. And that's as much because of the lack of experience. But there's a legit eight or nine teams that have a great chance, I think. And I think those teams believe that as well. And that plays a lot into this thing, the confidence. But it's pretty wide open, man. And I think this is exactly what the league wanted. You know, we've had five different winners the last 5 years. You know, and we've had teams that have been a seven or an eight seed get to the conference finals or the finals in that same stretch. So, you know, you talk about parity and teams really having a chance. We have that right now. You know, we're talking a lot about teams that are 6, 7, 8, 9 that have a great chance in the Western Conference, that no one's going to be surprised if they're able to go on a run.
Greg, good stuff. We'll be watching tonight. All of New York will, with the 76ers and the Knicks. We appreciate you coming on with us.
Thanks, man.
All right, man. You guys take care.
You got it. Greg Anthony, TNT, tonight with Ian Eagle, so that'll be a fun listen. You know, it's interesting what he said about Brunson, because as great as Brunson is, he's a physical guard who's not big, and they're playing him an inordinate amount of minutes, which I understand.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Thibodeau plays his players and doesn't have load management, but if he starts to labor, then all is lost. I mean, as nice a game as Deuce McBride has, The team's not the same without Jalen Brunson. So, you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You got to play him a lot. And if you play him a lot, are you playing him too much?
And that's why you got to want to have those games where whether you're being blown out or blowing out the other team where you can sit him for the whole fourth quarter. But whether it was that Memphis game where he stayed in or having to stay in late in the Detroit game because it came right down to the end, you can't afford to sacrifice games if you want to finish as high as you can. And he's right. You don't want to get into the play-in where this whole thing could be over in one or two games. You want to be able to finish as high as you can. But at the same time, while you're taking on these teams that can rest their stars for a quarter or just have them have load management, I like the fact the Knicks don't do it, Michael, but it is certainly going to be a disadvantage for them killing themselves to get the high seed, and then what will they have left for the first round of the playoffs and a run?
Quick aside, I'm sure all three of us, I haven't talked to Don and Peter about this, sending out our best wishes to Daryl Strawberry, who had a heart attack last night and had a stent inserted into one of his clogged arteries, and you know, he tweeted out and seemed like he was smiling in the hospital bed, but that's scary, 62 years old.
Yeah.
And so good thoughts to Daryl. I texted him earlier, and you know, that's scary stuff, man. It's scary, scary stuff.
Especially with us just, you know, we just found out that we're going to get to celebrate Daryl and Doc this season. So you read that and you go, oh, my God, what a scary thought if somehow we wouldn't have been able to get to that. So we're just happy he's doing all right.
Yeah, I texted you guys on the thread today. I was, you know, preparing for the Ranger game, and I was on social media, and I saw the statement from the Mets, but you know, statement on Daryl Strawberry, and like, oh my God, what happened? And so I was happy to hear that he was still with us, because that, when you see that kind of statement, it's like, oh my God, what happened? So that's the good news, I guess, with a heart attack. It's when you catch it. So the fact that he's still here and in the hospital and under evaluation, and knowing him, you know, he'll give everything he can to try to get back. But Peter, you're so right. I mean, in a year where both of those guys are going to be celebrated, that was certainly not the news that you wanted to hear, but if he's doing well, Michael, that's the best news possible.
Yeah, I mean, he was smiling in the hospital bed. Yes, just showed that picture from his ex account. So, again, good thoughts go out to Daryl. You know, I was thinking about this a lot after we went off the air yesterday, and I'm not specifically referring to anybody in the media. That's not what we do. That's not what I'm doing. But I get a sense of it with a lot of fans, too. I don't understand the enmity that fans have towards Saquon Barkley. I don't get it. What did you want him to do? The Giants didn't want him back at that price. So is he supposed to retire? Is he supposed to never play again? He took the money from the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I know that it's the Eagles. It annoys you. It probably makes you want to throw up in your mouth to see Saquon Barkley in an Eagles uniform. I get it. But So it's okay for the team to run it like a business, but it's not okay for the player to run it like a business? I don't understand all the hatred that's being directed toward this guy. The Giants didn't want him. So either he retires or goes to another team. So he's supposed to take less money and go to the Texans or whatever team is interested in him rather than the Eagles? No. If it's a business for the team, Don and Peter, you know what? It's a business for the player, too.
I know fan is short for fanatic, but it makes zero sense to be mad at him. Zero. And I thought Jordan broke it down well. It was very strategic for Saquon. He ended up winning at the end of the day. He bet on himself. He took a risk last year because he could have gotten hurt and never got this money. He was able to parlay it into a big contract. The Giants didn't want to pay him. Yeah, I can understand a Giant fan being upset. He's with the Eagles. You hate the Eagles. You hate the Cowboys. You grow up to hate those teams, but come on. You're going to begrudge that he's supposed to sacrifice millions of dollars to stay with a team that doesn't want him or go purposely sign for less money someplace else so he doesn't insult Giant fans. Now, I'm not saying you got to cheer for him or want him to do well because at the end of the day, that's a rival. But to hate him, to me, is just it's lazy and it makes no sense. And maybe it makes for good radio or good print. And, you know, I saw fans on social media burning his jersey. Grow up. And I don't understand why. Because I'm a little bit more logical, that makes me less of a fan. Like, the only way I can be a fan is if I go out there and act like a complete dullard and burn jerseys and hate him and all the vitriol that you throw at him. So that makes you a good fan? Or does that make you illogical? I want to see the Giants win. I love this team. This was handed down by my father and my father's father. They've been a part of my family, the Giants, for as long as I can remember, before I was born. But come on, man. You grow up and you realize it's a business, and he's entitled to make as much money as he can. He'd be foolish. It'd be bad business for him to take a haircut to go sign with the Texans or stay with the Giants for a team that didn't want him. And because I use logic and because I use my brain,
so
that
true.
Makes me less of a fan?
Here's the key, Peter. I could say, fans have a right to be angry if the Giants offered the same thing as the Eagles, and then his nose got out of joint because they made him test the mark, and he goes to the Eagles. Okay, you have a right to be mad. Hey, listen, everybody, get close to the speaker. They didn't even make him an offer. What do you want the guy to do? Walk away and retire? Peter, I don't get it. I don't get. I not only saw a burning of jerseys, I saw worse than that.
Yeah. No, if you're okay, I think we all came to the same conclusion yesterday that there's really nobody to be mad at here. I mean, it didn't make sense, and as you saw with the Brian Burns signing later yesterday, the Giants had other ideas of how they wanted to spend that money. And in 2024, guys, I think it'd be really hard for anyone to argue that an aging, oft-injured running back is a better use of your money than a young Pro Bowl pass rusher. So you can't really be mad at the Giants. You certainly can't be mad at Saquon for going to get the bag. But, Don, if you wanted to be irrational and be mad at anyone, it has to be the Giants, not Saquon. They didn't want him. If you want to say, hey, what happened to the Giant way? We take care of our own. He's a homegrown guy. He embodies the attitude of this team and this market. My kids have 26 jerseys. You should have just paid him. I may not agree with you, but I understand it, Don, much more than attacking Saquon for getting his money.
And the sad thing about it is, if Singletary goes out there and rushes for 1,500 yards and 20 touchdowns, and the Giants make the playoffs, guess what? All's forgiven. They did the right thing.
There's a guy on X, right? Q, right? He said, I love how Kate thinks fans would be happy about hearing this, and a laughing, crying emoji. I'm not saying you should be happy about
it. No.
But you shouldn't be angry at Saquon. Either he retires or he goes and plays for the most money. Why would you be mad at Saquon? As Peter just said, be mad at the Giants for not valuing the position more. You can't be mad at a guy when they didn't make him an offer, Q.
And again, you can be mad at the Giants all you want, but if Singletary goes out and balls out and Saquon, God forbid, gets hurt in week one, you know, are you going to be mad at the Giants anymore? I mean, it's a business, people. I know it stinks. I'd love it for guys to get drafted and spend their entire careers here, but it just, maybe because I'm getting older and I've seen the business, I'll go as far as to say this. If the money was equal and Saquon said, you know what, I'm not getting any younger, I got a better chance to win in Philadelphia than New York, and chose the Eagles, I'm still not sure you could be mad at him.
Well, I think you could be mad at
a trophy.
Him. Because after he's been saying, I want to be a Giant, if the Giants offered him a contract commensurate with what the Eagles did, and then he goes because he wants to win a Super Bowl, then you have the right to be angry. You have no right to be angry with him now. None. Zero.
But now, I was going
to
say,
even then, I mean, the guy, you know, has a right to do what he wants to do. And we'll see if it works out.
The one thing I could say to Saquon, maybe not ideal, was his IG post. I didn't love the IG post of him in the Giants uniform and it turning into the Eagles uniform. Maybe a little bit. I think maybe he was bent a little bit out of shape from the Tiki conversation.
Right.
I don't know if I would have. For a guy who's kind of been perfect from like a public relations standpoint, I didn't think it was the most tasteful move. But I get it. Yesterday probably got him pretty. He probably got pretty ticked off given that whole situation.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, on Thursday, this Thursday, the 44th annual Thurman Munson Awards Dinner takes place at Chelsea Piers, Pier 60 in New York City. It's a great event. It's presented by AHRC NYC Foundation. The benefit has helped to keep the memory of Thurman Munson alive since his tragic passing 44 years ago and has raised more than $21 million for children and adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities to lead richer, more productive lives. It's a sweet charity. It really, really is. This year's honorees are Mets 1986 World Series champion Howard Johnson, Fordham University women's hoops pioneer and NYC basketball Hall of Famer Ann Gregory O'Connell, and our next guest, four-time Yankees World Series champion Tino Martinez, who joins us now. Tino, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing wonderful. So what does an award with Thurman Munson's name mean to you, Tino?
Well, it means a lot. You know, to think that what Thurman Munson did for the Yankees and the kind of person he was, the way he lived his life. You know, having played for Lou Piniella for quite a few years in my big league career, he always spoke about Thurman Munson so highly, what a great teammate he was, what a good person he was. So to be able to get an award with his name on it is quite an honor, and I'm looking forward to it.
I'm assuming coming up in the Yankee organization in the mid-90s, coming over from Seattle, and you said you knew Lou, and that they probably hearken back a lot to those 70 teams. And even though you didn't get a chance to play with them, you probably felt like you got to know them a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And over the years, being in spring training with Greg Nettles and Guidry and Reggie Jackson, the stories they talk about their teams, and especially Thurman being their captain, I learned a whole lot about all of those guys and about the teams they played on. And it was a lot of fun to hear the stories, but also, again, how Thurman was really a guy who kept that team together through all the chaos they may have gone through with George Steinbrenner and Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson, those type of guys. He kept it all together for them.
Tino, you've been down in Tampa and have been with the team for a bit. And you know, the news today about Gerrit Cole, where they're obviously looking at the MRI, getting opinions and stuff like that, it doesn't sound great. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I'm just wondering, were you ever on teams where there was a significant injury of somebody that was really counted on? How does the team keep its feelings positive and not get down in the dumps and not just give up on the season when you're losing somebody like that for any amount of time?
Yeah, it would be a big loss, kind of like when Aaron Judge went down last year. The team kind of didn't play as well as they should have, but everybody else has to pick up the slack. I mean, there's four other guys in the rotation that have to do their job day in and day out, and the days that they pitch are just as important as the days that Gerrit Cole would pitch. And obviously, it leaves a big hole in the rotation. But the offense has to do their jobs, and play team ball. They've been swinging the bats very well in spring training, and could have to score some runs. But again, those guys, Nestor Cortez, Rodon, all those guys have to pitch the way they're capable of pitching to keep the team in the game and keep them above water throughout the year. But the only way I could compare that to is when I played for the Seattle Mariners, and we lost Ken Griffey Jr., right in the middle of August or early August, when we were making a run in 1995 to catch the Angels to win the division. We were playing great baseball, and we lost him for 73 days. And, obviously, you lose a guy like Ken Griffey Jr. out of your lineup for that long a time. We all had to pick it up. I had to do my job offensively. Jay Buhner, Edgar Martinez. We just picked up the slack, and the guys who came in, the role players all did their job. We kept it together and just didn't look back, and that's what the Yankees have to do. It's early in the season now. They can, organize themselves if it is an extended period of time. But, it's not like in the middle of the year where they're already struggling. It's kind of like it's a fresh start, and they need to get off to a good start regardless.
Now, the only thing I could think of when it comes to the Yankees that, when you were on that team, 96, when Cone had the aneurysm, how did you guys deal with that in that room?
Well, first of all, not only losing Coney as a great pitcher, but the scare of, a life-threatening type of cancer scared all of us to begin with. So then we were just happy to begin with that he was going to be all right and he's going to be able to come back and pitch again eventually. But Yeah, you know, he was not only a great pitcher for us, but a great clubhouse presence. And losing him was tough. But again, we had, you know, we had the Andy Pettits and the El Duques and those guys that you know, went out there and did their job every 4 or 5 days and kept us in ball games. We were able to continue winning games until Coney got back.
Is it different when it's a pitcher as opposed to a position player, as far as having to deal with the injury in the room?
I would say it is a little bit different in most instances, but you know, we're talking about Gerrit Cole, the Cy Young winner, who's the best pitcher in baseball right now and has been for quite a while. That's a big loss. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat that or say that, well, if they lost, you know, Stanton to somebody for a period of time or an offensive player, this guy they rely on for 30 starts a year and, you know, close to 20 wins a year. So that's a huge loss. You can't compare that to an offensive player at all because there's no doubt about it. That's going to be a huge hole for them to fill.
Now, you were down there, as I mentioned. I love watching Juan Soto hit. What's your take on this guy? How good is he?
Well, I have been very impressed. You know, I've seen him play in the last couple of years on TV only. I've never seen him play live. And the first couple of days watching him hit batting practice was unbelievable. I've never, you know, these guys these days are in the launch angle and trying to hit home runs in batting practice and hit the ball in the air. He hits line drive, I mean, bullet line drives to left center, one after another for about two rounds. And then every now and then he'll turn on one, hit a home run to right field, but his focus is line drives to left field, line drives to left field. And he's so professional. He's not messing around the batting cage. And then all the at-bats that I've seen in spring training, he's got great command of the strike zone. He doesn't chase balls out of the zone. He shortens up his stride. He chokes up with two strikes to put the ball in play hard. It's been unbelievable. I can't believe how good he really is.
You guys set a standard that it's very difficult for this team to live up to. Four championships in 5 years. It was an incredible run. Do you think you could have done that today with the revenue sharing and the parity? How much more difficult do you think that championship run would be here in this time period?
Well, I think it's tough to really compare years and decades and all that. But, you know, our team was so good at playing team ball. And I think that our team from back then can definitely compete with these guys. You know, we didn't strike out a lot. We moved guys over. We hit with two strikes. We played great defense. We did so many little things that it took to win ball games day in and day out throughout the year, and especially in the postseason. So I do think we would fare very well against these teams that are out there now, and although there are a lot of good teams. But it's hard to compare our teams to anyone else now because nobody's gone back-to-back. But we just had what it took, and we had you know, a great manager. We had Mariano Rivera. We had a great team, and we just knew how to win and wanted to win.
Tino Martinez, our guest, he's going to be honored at the Thurman Munson Award Dinner this Thursday with an award given by the foundation. I got to ask you this, Tino, because of all the people on the Yankees, you and Posada, you probably knew and know Derek better than anybody. Are you stunned that he's become a broadcaster? I mean, I'm stunned that O'Neill became a broadcaster. How about Derek Jeter?
And beyond just the broadcasting, Tino, it's not even just that. He's doing interviews. He's out on the town talking to people. He's just like turned over a new leaf, this guy.
You're right. I agree. You know, first of all, I couldn't believe that the Paul would be one. And Paul is a really good one. He's awesome to listen to on the game. But Derek, I just think that, you know, we knew Derek's personality over the years, how he was, but he was quite reserved to you guys in the media and didn't give you too many answers or too much information and didn't show his true personality day in and day out in the media. But he was always a fun guy. And I think the job he has now, it's not necessarily, you know, calling games like you do, Michael, which is tough. That's one of the toughest jobs in baseball. People don't understand how hard that is until you're up there in the booth. But to do the pregame and postgame in a setting where he can joke around with Big Poppy and he can criticize or joke around with A-Rod and those guys, that's right up his alley. He's a funny guy, and he's doing a great job with it. So, you know, and he's been retired, and he's looking for things to do, and that's such a great gap to fill for him to have fun and still be involved in the game.
Now it's almost impossible to turn on the TV. He's on every commercial too. I love it. He's changed. He's turned over a new leaf, Tino. He really has.
He has. You know, and it's good to see. You know, he put so much effort and time into those 20 years of the big leagues with you know, not being married, not having kids, just focused on being a great player and winning championships to now having kids and having a wife and all that. And he's really adjusted really well to that lifestyle of the fun that it is and the work it takes to do that. He's really enjoying every bit of it. And, yeah, you can't turn the TV on. He's making lots of commercials, and I just wish he'd call me and get me in one of them.
Yeah. It's only fair, right? I'll give you one of those, you know, Jeeps or whatever.
You know how many balls I picked out the dirt for him at first base? Come on.
Oh, you saved errors for him.
Absolutely. You deserve
it. That's a big deal.
You deserve it.
That's a big deal.
Tino, I look forward to seeing you soon, and you know, congratulations on the award on Thursday. It's a great event, and I hope you have a wonderful time.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Look forward to seeing you all, too. Thank you.
All right, Tino. That's Tino Martinez. Don, it just came forward that Rempe got a 4-game suspension. Is that more than you thought?
Yeah, I thought it would probably be around 2. But the one thing that I don't get, like, well, he's not a repeat offender. He's played 10 games. I mean, you don't have time to be a repeat offender. All right, so I never understood that defense. And yeah, he might not have been a repeat offender, but in 2 of his 10 games that he's played, he's taken game misconducts and basically be booted out of the game. So it might seem a little bit excessive, but I knew he was going to get something. I knew it was going to be less than 5 because it wasn't an in-person meeting. I probably would have went 2, but I think 4 is fair, and we'll see if when he comes back after those 4 games, which, because they got such a busy week, Michael, it'll be Winnipeg on Tuesday, believe it or not. He'll be eligible to come back a week from now because they got tonight, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. Those 4 games he'll be out. So it really ends up being just a week of hockey that he'll miss in those 4 games.
Now, this might be dramatic, and I will let you and Peter decide whether it is, but okay. You know, this is showing 2 different angles of what he did. And I got to tell you, you got to be a little off to do something like that because you could, he could have really, really drastically hurt this guy.
Well,
like incidental contact. He went in full bore with his elbow to the guy's head.
Well,
it's
not
unbelievable.
Only that, Don, the angle is such, he almost could have risked boarding him too. It's like he hit him across the face, plus it's right against the boards. It's not great.
Not being a professional athlete, I've seen good guys. Like, you can't find a nicer guy than Adam Graves. And he slashed at the wrists of Mario Lemieux and got suspended. It was more lengthy than it should have been. But I guess you get in the heat of the moment and you got to be able to contain yourself. And you make a split-second decision that if given any more time, you would realize, I can't do this. This is stupid. But, you know, you lift up the elbow and you clip him in the head and it looks ridiculous. But I guess that's what can happen. That's the difference between being in control and out of control, right?
I mean, Don, you snap his neck like that, you could paralyze the guy.
A split second more, and he realizes how stupid that would be. That's why it's indefensible and has to be suspended. But I think in the heat of the moment, you know, you got to give a bit of a break to athletes because they're not thinking rationally the way we are, watching it, knowing what already had happened, not having the emotion of the moment. But still, you got to be able to control yourself. You're right. I mean, Siegenthaler didn't come back. I don't know what his latest update is, but you're right. What if Siegenthaler suffered a massive concussion and can't play in hockey again? Or, as Peter said, he's close to the boards and hits and, you know, cracks his skull open. It's a really ugly incident, especially for a guy as big as he is, his size. Throwing an elbow at that speed is not nothing.
And also, let's be honest, guys, the waving bye-bye to the bench afterwards, it's
not a good look.
No, it's
well,
not
that was
great.
At McDermott because he was thrown out of the game. The officials weren't going to let him go at McDermott. And I don't think he even realized. Well, I don't know why he wouldn't realize Siegenthaler was hurt. He was laying down on the ice when all that was going on. Yeah, it's awful. He's a good kid. I think he's a good player, but these are the things that he's got to be able to manage out of his game because you're not going to be good to anybody. The next time he does that, guys, it's going to be even a longer suspension, and then you build a reputation, and you know there's going to be teams that are going to try to goat him into overreacting to things, and then a nice player that's been a contributor to your team now becomes a non-entity.
Peter, why don't you tell us a little bit about Dodge if you have the inclination?
No, I do. I do, guys. Hey, New York. It's Peter for Security Dodge, Long Island Ram and Wrangler headquarters. Come get some. And right now, you can come get a 2023 Jeep Gladiator for up to 30% off MSRP. That's right, up to 30% off MSRP. Don't forget about their 7-year, 100,000-mile certified pre-owned warranty on all certified pre-owns, all during the Jeep Celebration event. Shop 24/7 at SecurityDodge.com.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, join the Michael K. Show for a live Big East broadcast. It's on Friday, March 15th,
sure.
Starting at 3 p.m. at the Rutherford, a rooftop restaurant on 33rd Street across from Madison Square Garden. There'll be plenty of ESPN swag given away and a chance to score Big East tournament tickets. See the K Show live with special Big East guests at the Rutherford on 33rd Street this Friday starting at 3 p.m. Brought to you by Sam Adams, Truly Hard Seltzer, Schweppes, and Nissan.
Now, this is an important event, the Rutherford. People need to come out and see us, Michael. This event is so important.
How important?
It's so important that Don has volunteered to fly back and forth from Pittsburgh that day just to be there with our people.
Yep.
So you need to come out. You need to see Don. You need to thank him. You need to show love. And let's do what we do best, which is break down college basketball to a fine powder and hang out with our people and have a great time.
That's right.
Now, I don't want you to mislead people. It's not going to be a total college basketball show. It's going to be the show.
I would assume that's correct.
Prepared. I've been preparing. You know, the Rangers, Canes be damned, for 3.5 hours of pure Big East college basketball.
Yeah. No, unadulterated.
Right. I mean, we might have Garrett Cole news by then.
You know what? Well, it's going to have to wait till Saturday. It's going to have to wait till like a dance.
That's right.
What? Yeah. What's your take, guys, on our good friend Sammy Darnold going to the Vikings? Now, they signed him to $10 million contract. That's not to back up. You don't give a backup $10 million.
Well, unless you're the Jets. They do. No, the people do. I mean, I think Brissett got close to that in Washington,
yeah.
too.
Josh McCown got $10 million from the Jets to back up and hold the clip.
Yeah, there. And that was asinine and ridiculous.
Tyrod got $8 million today from the Jets.
Tyrod's a better backup quarterback than Sam Darnold. Darnold, I guess O'Connell thinks that he can make something out of him.
Wait, real quick. That's the only move they've made so far, right? And
Kirk Cousins.
Well, no, that's what I mean, post-Cousins. And they don't have a great draft position, do they? Where is Minnesota?
It's in the north part of the United States.
Thank you
very much. Why is 11 stick in my head? Can we confirm
that? I like what you're saying. I'm going to look it up right now for you. Kind of guy that it's 11.
Yeah.
Look at you. Wait, hold on. I can't see. Let me put my glasses down. Is that Todd McShay?
No, it's just the things that stick in my head.
But also, speaking of mediocre quarterbacks, big move by my Commies today. You hear that?
No, what happened?
Oh, Marcus Mariota, baby.
Oh, there you go.
So now that's a backup. That lets me
know. That's not a bad backup.
No, I love it. That, yeah. $6 million. You're going to be drafting a rookie quarterback. You also have Sam Howell, who we know. Kind of know what he is, so I love getting Mariota in that position. I'm not mad at it. And you saw the Austin Eckler move, Michael, last night. What are your thoughts?
It didn't exactly float my boat. How about you?
Really, you did not like the Austin Eckler move?
It's okay, but I mean, I don't think it's a game changer.
Oh, I think it's just a really nice pickup. I mean, they let go of Antonio Gibson yesterday, and you know, it's 2 years again. And this is the thing that's tough about the situation Saquon was in, Don. It's a 2-year deal for Austin Eckler for $11.5 million. Over 7 years in L.A., yeah. He averaged 1,200 yards a season. It's a pretty good running back at a really good price.
And you know what? I mean, I'd have to go back. I mean, Anthony, you'll probably remember who it was that maybe it was Barnwell that put the financial value on all these free agent running backs. And I think he got it. I think he got it wrong. They all, I think, got more than what he thought. Because I think this extra money on the salary cap certainly went to these running backs to get the little extra. Because I don't think any of them signed for less than six, right? So I think they all pretty much got because I think they had Singletary between 4 and 6. He ended up getting 6, but I think everybody else got north of what Barnwell had financially put them at, and that's a guy that certainly knows what he's doing. But I think there was extra money that was able to get thrown around because of the cap growing.
Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. What do you think what the Jets have done, Ira?
Hey, what's happening, everybody?
That's the better question. What they haven't done. Well, I'm glad they brought Zerline back. And oh, by the way, good for Donald. You know, maybe this will work out this time in Minnesota. Maybe he'll turn out to be like Geno Smith. But you know, you look at for a team that it sounded like the owner said it's playoffs or bust. Now I get it, Don. You've always said it. I really don't want to play B players A money. I get it, but. Besides Zerline, and I like the Tyrod Taylor signing, he's a good, decent backup, they really haven't done a thing. I mean, the guard they brought in from the Ravens pretty much is a wash, okay? He's going to, hopefully he's as good as Tomlinson, and Tomlinson had a horrible year last year. The other pieces, they're just pieces, depth places. So for a team that's got to win now, I just don't get it. And as crazy as this sounds, maybe with Rodgers coming out and saying he wants to stay another 2 or 3 years, maybe Sala and Douglas know, you know what, as long as they're competitive next year, if Rodgers hangs around, we're going to be back.
Because I got something that's right going to going to shock you, Ira. You ready?
What's that?
You ready for this?
All right, brace yourself.
Yep.
Ben Spiegel, who's a legitimate journalist who writes for the Times, has just tweeted out that Aaron Rodgers is on RFK Jr.'s list for vice president.
No.
That's true.
Wait. So
could you imagine, Ira, if you lost your quarterback to the vice presidency?
That's tough.
That would be good with Woody maybe going back to London. You know, who knows? Yeah,
right, that's what I'm saying. You might get a situation. You're going to watch the election like you've never watched it before. Who am I going to lose? Am I going to lose my quarterback? Am I going to lose my owner?
I know I may have more interest in the election than the draft.
I don't want to be a spoiler here. I don't think the results of the election will affect Aaron Rodgers no matter what, unfortunately.
No, if he chooses him as the vice president, I don't think he can play football on campaign, Peter. No. I don't think RFK Jr.
Why not?
Is going to win.
Why can't he campaign?
As a quarterback?
He can do a lot of things, Michael.
Come on. He's got a big platform. You know what I mean?
And just be the quarterback and go on Pat McAfee instead of going on, like, you know, campaign trails.
I hear Biden wants Breece Hall to be involved in the campaign.
Oh, Ira,
and I can
not
really
good.
Just get it.
No, this is way over my head. I can't get this is crazy. But I tell you the truth. Listen, I have to say I am a little disappointed. I get it. The people who are out there, teams don't want. But the Jets sure had a lot of holes, and I just haven't seen anything done yet, and it's kind of surprising.
Yeah, it is weird. We talked about it a little bit earlier. It seems like they're on an austerity kick, and they do have some maneuverability under the cap, so they've certainly gone for the lower-level signings. Doesn't mean that's bad. If you pick the right guys, it could work out.
Well, we'll see what they do with the offensive line. Michael, you can want a slow burn of Rodgers being around for a while, but if you don't protect him, he won't be around much during the length of that time because he'd be hurt. You want to be able to protect him. But, again, there's sexy, and then there's what gets the job done. And if they feel like that there's some guys they can get a little bit later on in free agency that actually get the job done, that's not going to matter. It won't matter how sexy it is.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.